First off, I want to say thank you all for having me. My name is Tony F. I am out of the Oh My God home group. I'm actually based physically out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. One of the, I was trying to think of the right term for it earlier, but COVID kids, Zoom babies, whatever you want to call it. About just shy of 2.5 years sobriety. So I got sober back in February of 2020. And I just want to take again a moment to just appreciate being here, given the opportunity to talk with you all. I've not done one this long before, but I'll give it a try. So a bit about myself. Let's see, I guess I should say I'm in my late 30s now. That's kind of daunting to say. But I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. Grew up in an area with the usual suburban, lower middle class type, usual to me. Lifestyle, two working parents, a couple siblings. But what I grew up doing was having a introverted lifestyle. That word gets thrown around a lot these days. But for me, really what it turned into was I like to read and I like to play games. If given the option between a sunny day outside and taking another crack at Tolkien, I'll probably go for another round of Tolkien. And I think that actually persists with me today. Regardless though, I grew up in a Methodist lifestyle. So I grew up religious, but Methodist is not too religious. I grew up with a mindset drilled into me to be helpful and as kind to others as I could be. Sometimes to the detriment of myself, it caused me to favor being by myself, being with my thoughts. Being alone more than most other children would. And that followed me through into my middle school and high school years where I favored being by myself. I had friends, don't get me wrong, but I didn't have social opportunities. I didn't have healthy ways for me to feel comfortable in a crowd. I didn't find myself having ways to just be comfortable in my own skin. I still work on that today. Also, on top of that, I found myself in grade school being pretty smart, probably to my detriment because it never really taught me how to study. So I was just smart and winged stuff, and it worked out for the best usually. So then, when I got to my college years, I was not prepared for failure or for feeling down or feeling a sense of failure when it came to things I was previously good at. This, with my procrastination, would lead to long bouts of isolating myself in my room to crank through a project, powering through something, which put me into a mindset of trusting only what's between my skull. So trusting my brain, believing I could power through a problem even if I wasn't prepared for it, not really being prepared to ask for help. So, over the course of my early life, I was teaching myself every day, every year, to trust my ability to deduce a problem and succeed at the end of the day. What this really built into me was a sense of stubbornness and a bit of defiant behavior, especially when being told to do something else, maybe for my own benefit. That moved me into my early adult life, and I had a chance to meet a wonderful person, my first wife, emphasis on first. And we hit it off very well. But I think my lack of a full, complete picture of what a good marriage should look like, especially for my childhood, my parents divorced when I was early on, they had several problems. I never really saw what a good marriage looked like, so I didn't really know what to look for. I found a good person, married them, only to have it blow up in my face years later. And I just didn't know what I was looking for. So when those pieces started to fall apart, I once again fell to my old behavior, isolation, pulling back, which as we all know, is a recipe for just a wonderful way to have a marriage. And that marriage collapsed spectacularly after about 4.5 years. My partner in crime during this collapsing marriage, however, was alcohol. Alcohol was a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful numbing agent. It made me feel better. It made me feel right, most importantly. It made me feel comfortable with what was going on, or at least able to accept it better, or at least thinking I was accepting it better. But I do think that the most important thing of what it did to me is it solidified my decision that I was right in my choices, right in my beliefs. It made me a real son of a bitch, I'm sure. And I have a very tactile memory of being in yet another argument with my ex-wife after work, and finding her pacing the first floor, going to the second floor, and I'm reading in the corner with a giant tumbler of gin. And I'm just tracing the brick next to me on the wall, just feeling the sensation in my thumb and focusing most all my energy on that without even thinking about it. All while, of course, the gin is working its magic on me to numb me from what was going on around me. So that instilled, you know, during my early 20s, just this strong, powerful habit of turning to this, you know, juniper medication that released me from this little hell I'd built myself into, with, you know, without my knowing, I was building my own little hell. And it was around this time of my life, around 27, that my dad got sick. My dad had always been a drinker. He's still alive. But around that time, he had, well, in the years leading up to this point, he and my mom had divorced. He had been living by himself in a little condo. And, you know, in the years leading up to my divorce, whenever I would call him, and I would call him a couple times a week just to check in on him, and I would find him in various states of, you know, inebriation. So conversations, if I called him at 6 or called him at 8, they could last 10 minutes or an hour and a half, depending on how many times I went through the same conversation with him. So around this point, when I was going through my divorce, he got sick, having been found in his condo, unconscious on the floor of his bathroom for, they estimate, a day and a half. I don't know if he was unconscious the whole time, but he had suffered a fall, couldn't remember a thing, and was in pretty bad shape. He was actually admitted to the hospital, of course, and went to a critical care unit. He was there for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. And I'd come to visit him a couple times. I was working, I was going through divorce, I was living 3 hours away. And having seen him, I saw like this, I don't know, in the back of my mind, I saw an affirmation of my own future in a way. I knew my family on both sides had a disposition to drinking and to depression and to pills, all of which would be other stories, but I could see him, I could see him myself in what he was going through. And he did recover, and he actually, I don't know if he swore off alcohol, but he stopped drinking. I don't think it was anything vocalized for a while. But that really sold home to me this sense of finality or sense of surety, actually, that there was something in my family that I would be leading myself into, or maybe giving myself permission that if that happened to me, well, it was in the cards, what can I do? So thus begins my, you know, I go through the divorce, I begin my bachelor life, and having gotten married right out of college, I never really had a bachelor life, especially having been introverted in my late teen, my college years. And for once in my life, I actually felt successful on all fronts. I had a nice house in a downtown city, had a good job, was going upward, good career progression, felt respected, and felt successful at work, which is important. I also finally, for once in my life, felt sexually successful, desirable even. But almost all of this was revolving around alcohol. My old neighborhood, had a little Irish pub, actually a really quaint place, and it's hard not to feel fond about it a little bit. And I remember being in my separation process with my wife, finding myself going here to do the thing you do at bars, which is where you go and talk about your problems, find a person to talk to, maybe not, you know, don't sob into your beer, but just you go to the bar to talk about problems, because that's what they do on Cheers and shit like that. So I did that. Found it really wasn't my thing to talk about problems, but I found, though, a community of people, the regulars, that quickly befriended me. So I felt at home. I felt accepted in a social setting. My goodness. Who'd have thought? I also found myself actually quite socially adept after a beer and a half, or, well, two or three, actually, at that point. So I'd go back and back and back to this bar, you know, not just once a week. I started going two or three times a week, soon to be four or five times a week in the years following. This place is only open six times a week. I sometimes would even do all 6 days. The exception would be the day I would skip it. That'd be the weird part. But what this taught me was this sense of safety, this sense of home, this sense of acceptance, friendship, success, sexuality in this place, and coupled tightly with drinking. And up to this point, my drinking, you know, before finding this pub, my drinking had always been personal, solo. I wasn't not drinking before then. I just simply had my bottle of whatever, and I would make a mixed drink, do some work, and I'd work and drink, and that was it at home. But now it was, I'd work and drink at home, go out to the pub, work and drink some more, go back home, drink some more. And that was my day, every day. So there wasn't a day that I wasn't drinking. In fact, I had been once challenged by my first wife to go for a week. Can you imagine? A week without drinking. And I actually remember, I wasn't even honest about that. That was another thing I was bad at, was honesty. I remember saying, making a big deal about, oh yeah, I can do that, no problem. I was proud. I was too proud to admit I couldn't do it. God, of course, just going a week without drinking, anyone can do that. You're an alcoholic if you can't do that. And I would cheat drinks because she would go to bed at 9:30. So I'd be up late working and just happen to have a martini or two at 10, 11 p.m. at night. Obviously, she must have known we slept in the same bed together. You really can't hide gin martini breath, you know, at 5 or 6 a.m. when you wake up. So, but she never mentioned it. I claimed victory regardless. Maybe even over myself, I claimed victory over that little spiel. Anyway, so I'm a newfound bachelor. I'm going to this pub all the time. I'm working and being successful at life. I'm being successful at work. I'm being successful at home, whatever was it. And it's going great for now. I start having a few problems, close calls even, throughout that period. And I start driving when I shouldn't be a little bit more often, quite often. I do stupid things when I'm drinking. A couple close calls where I'm on the top of a row house roof, breaking into my own house because I lost my key in the park that night at 1 a.m. Just trying to break into my own house, nearly falling to my death and breaking my neck. You know? Anyway, I don't think twice of that. It's not a problem because it didn't happen. So why worry about it? It was in this point that I met Joey, my partner, my wife, who I'm with now. It feels weird to put a, you know, temporal statement around that, but I found my wife and move out further from the city, which takes me further away from my actual office. Now, until this point, I would still go to the office three or four times a week. And that would give me this span of mostly sober time. every day in the work week, almost every day in the work week, where I would be sober. But now I'm further on the other side of town. It's just a pain in the ass to get out there. And at the same time at work, I work IT, we had reorganized. And now all the people I work with are in different cities and different countries. And there goes out an edict at work. Well, if you're working primarily remote anyway, don't bother coming into the office. We'll repurpose the space. So here I am, working from home. My wife is working in a in-person job, you know, doing her thing down in the city. I'm by myself in our house, or in her house, all day, every day. I'm cranking along, doing no problem. And I, you know, have no problem at first. I don't have a problem yet. And I start moving that little line in the sand of when it's okay to drink earlier and earlier. Well, I should do it from your perspective, earlier and earlier into the day. And no longer is it 6 p.m. No longer is it 5 p.m., 4 p.m. It's just a drink at, it's a drink at lunch. I would, you know, get the handle of the gin, get the tonic water, have a little spritzer with my lunch, and then be done, you know, be a little pick me up, and turn around and be fine, come back at five, and then have another one when the day's finished, and go out, play with the dog, and cool, what a great day. And I start having two at lunch, and I start having gin throughout the day. And around that point, a year into it, Joey makes a career change, ends up coming and working out of the house, well, one of the houses. So now I've got people in the house with me. You know, it's not just the dog I'm trying to hide my drinking from, it's my wife. So I start placing strategic little stashes, caches around the house. Little filing cabinet to my right here, pull back the bottom drawer, and there in the back underneath the clipboard is the bottle of gin, you know, with the backup bottle, because you have to have a backup. It's over in the closet over there, or upstairs in my old suitcase that I would travel with. So I start having little caches around the house, thinking I was so clever. And at first I was, at least I think there was a point where, there was a period where I wasn't being caught, it wasn't obvious, but then problems started occurring. I'm just checking my notes real quick here. Yeah. So I start missing things. I start sleeping through meetings, sleeping during the day, just crashing. Around 2 p.m. was really notorious crash time, which isn't surprising. You know, you can't really stomach breakfast. Or at least I was starting to not be able to stomach breakfast. I always thought that was just a me thing. Turns out it was just a drinking thing. So all it's in me by about, you know, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, it's about two cocktails, maybe three, maybe a handful of nuts. I was big into taking mixed nuts and putting in my pocket, snacking on a nut or two to fuel me, and a whole bunch of coffee, really. So I start crashing around 2 p.m. And missing calls. I start being embarrassed at work. Joey starts finding me, you know, having fallen asleep on the floor. She always thought it was just because I worked so late and I was so tired. That's the excuse she gave me. Oh yeah, he works so hard, and then he just crashes right there on the floor. And like, yeah, well, looking back, it's because I was fucking drunk. and I did some very stupid things. I had been helping these two neighbor girls, two little kids that had to go to and from school, and their mom couldn't help them, needed help. So Joey would take them in the morning and I'd come and pick them up from school, made a little deal out of it. So here I am driving two little kids, you know, two or three cocktails in every day from school. Sometimes even being late for that, sleeping in and missing that, getting called by the elementary school. Imagine you're the elementary school principal or teacher calling some white guy to pick up two little black girls, and the white guy shows up 20 minutes late, probably not looking so hot. So very embarrassing and shameful. So these problems started coming up. On top of that, as mentioned before, I was a bit of a stubborn, inward-thinking person. I prided myself on trusting my own judgment and trusting my own decision-making capabilities, that ability to come to the logical conclusion, which only intensified when I had been drinking, especially the type of drunk I would get. You know, you've been drinking all day. There's a lull, you wake up crabby, and you have another drink, but you're not drunk. You don't feel like you were drunk. And so you're just pissy and not sober, but not enjoying it. And so we'd get into fights, Joey and I, about any given topic. Could be about our neighbor, could be about some philosophical thing, could be about culture, could be about, doesn't really matter. Point is, I would draw a hard line in the sand, and I found myself just really tripling down on this stubbornness and this defiance of, no, you aren't right. And then the arguments go from conceptual into, well, you said this way five sentences ago, you said this, that then controverts this. Really pissant stuff. So life was starting to not be as fun. Even the pub that I had moved away from, I had gone back to every now and then as a little jaunt, a little treat, go over there on a Friday night or something, and just didn't feel fun anymore. Felt either too loud because I wasn't drunk enough yet, or I felt just too drunk, too tired, too drained of it. The social energy was gone, success feeling was gone. All that was left was this attempt at finding a balance that was no longer attainable, finding the right type of drunk. Couldn't find it anymore. So I started failing in life, at work, with the missing meetings. I start not liking my job, although in my defense, the job had some problems baked into it. Point is, though, you really don't want to be on this. You don't want to be reassigned to the special projects manager at a company, which is what my job turned into. Doesn't matter, though. But anyway, the point is, I was failing now, I was facing senses of failure in life, in home, in work, and even in social, which had been good to me until that point. And just like at college, when I all of a sudden hit that brick wall of failure where I can't just use brilliance to, overcome a test, I started spiraling in the face of this failure. I didn't know how to study and work at it. I didn't know how to work at being a better person, a better husband, a better employee. My methods of winging it were not working. So I started feeling anxious. I know I've always been an anxious guy, I think. But it started getting really bad. I started getting jittery, started getting worried. I started getting not paranoid, but fretting about things that normally wouldn't have caused me concern. The feeling you'd get when you'd had maybe two cups of coffee past your proper limit, and where it wasn't fun anymore. So I was starting to reach out, branch out into things to try to fix this new problem that I had. Because it must have been a new problem, couldn't have been anything that existed before. This is brand new. All my problems were coming from this new core of being anxious. Fix the anxiety with some cure, and all of a sudden life will be better. Or so I thought. So I start trying out things like deep tissue massage. I start trying things like deep breath exercises, or deep breathing rather. And these were helpful, no doubt. I even found, or my wife is she likes to dabble in home remedies, not as a replacement, but as a supplement. And so she had made me a tincture out of some part of marijuana. I'm not really sure what part of the plant. It never really was my thing, but it was supposed to be an anxiety reliever. If it was effectively pot mixed with a bit of brandy, essenced down into some eyedropper thing. Couldn't get drunk on it, but certainly wasn't, you know, FDA approved. And I remember carrying this thing around like it was a fucking talisman. Forgive my swearing. I apologize. I don't know if we're allowed to die, but this thing was my cure-all. I don't know if it worked, but it felt like it sometimes. I even started taking it with me to work on trips, which must have made them thrilled. I would get the shakes bad while trying to use it. I'd be so anxious and worried about what was going on at work. I'd be dropping, you know, not the one drop, I'd be dropping the five drops, you know, every half hour to get through a day. Probably was adding up. So I had these alternative remedies that I was going through, plowing through, trying to find some sort of fix to what was going on in my life. And work was continuing to spiral down. I was not impressing my new boss. I had taken a new job. I'd left the nest of the boss who had really been able to deal with me and tolerate me where I felt successful. So things were starting to look bad. On top, during this point, I was also doing frequent trips to and from Cleveland for my work. And again, I'm out of Pittsburgh, so it was a quick, easy trip. And I think a good barometer for how bad I was in my addiction was these Cleveland trips are nothing. They're drive up, you know, do the 2 hours, get a hotel if you need to, and come back the next day, you're good to go. I started making this elaborate thing where, you know, I had to fit the drive-in, you know, after all my drinking's done, and I'd gotten a little shy at around 7 p.m., you know, to make sure I was okay, or maybe I'd planned to leave after work and then conveniently find traffic too bad and get a couple more drinks in me, be leaving my house at around 10 p.m. for a one-day trip to Cleveland and getting to the hotel by midnight. The hell's the point of that? And still find a reason to get to the hotel, having got a six-pack, having drank the six-pack that night, to go to the office for supposedly 6 a.m., 7 a.m. call or meeting, show up at 8, I'd be late and blowing out the meetings, taking them from the phone from the hotel room when I drove there in the first place, and going to the hotel bar after the work is done. They're like next door to each other. Going to the hotel bar to get a couple more drinks in me to at least alleviate some of that anxiety and freaking out I was going through before I drove back to Pittsburgh to be driving through my old neighborhood and stop at that pub again, my old haunting ground, to get back at my house or Joe's house at about 9 p.m. I think in the course of, I don't know, 25 hours, I would have had about 15 drinks in me. Pretty hard work when you're at the office for 8 of those hours, in my opinion. And eventually I even just started drinking while I was on the road. I had a little salsa jar, like those old Trader Joe's salsa jars. We washed out and I put my gin and tonic in there so the dog didn't kick it over. Well, that salsa jar just turned into my best friend, you know, during this point. Started finding its way in the car with me. Why not, right? That was terrible. And I think my worst point in one of those trips was actually where I started sleeping at the turnpike rest stop. Maybe that was a good decision, but it was still a shitty point in my life. But I just remember feeling too drunk or too tired or too both of the things to get to the Cleveland facility on time, where I just stopped at the turnpike and crashed in the back of my car. Not physically crashed, but slept in the back seat of the car. This is not a large car. To check into the hotel at 6 a.m. to a very curious receptionist, or maybe not curious, and to have a wonderful day at work. It's horrible. So that's what work was starting to look like. It was starting to really fall apart at the seams. And so my work's falling apart. My home life is falling apart. So I'm starting to fight with Joey more and more. One of the things we were fighting about, Joey and I, was whether or not I was depressive. If I was depressed. No, I'm not depressed. I'm just anxious. No. Well, fine. I'll see a therapist. And it wasn't even necessarily a debate about whether I was depressed. It was a debate about seeing a doctor or seeing some sort of counselor. And I faced that with so much denial for the longest time, and stubbornness and defiance, that I finally bowed when I agreed to see a therapist. And I think it was a forced bow. I recall seeing the first three or so different counselors being extremely not open-minded to what they had to say. And I certainly wasn't telling them how much I was drinking. I think I saw a therapist, I saw a psychiatrist, and I saw a psychologist, and I saw another therapist. And they each would ask you, you know, ask me how much you're drinking or how much do you drink, among other questions. I say, oh, you know, about two a day. Even a day, that sounds like a lot, you know, to a normal person, daily drinker. It must be a lot. Yeah, but I'm only two a day. So I'm an alcoholic. I didn't mention, by the way, that the two were these mason jars. So they only got fully empty twice a day. Doesn't count if you're refilling it every time he goes halfway down. That's still one drink, right? That was my logic. The hell's that? So thanks, Megan. That was my story to my doctor. So you can imagine the type of help I was being told and being willing to hear. And it wasn't getting better. It was around this point, so I would have been, I don't have a good frame on age, but it would have been around 2018, 2019, probably around the beginning of 2019, that I began having, I thought they were stress-related morning sickness type events. I would wake up and vomit. I would have no appetite. I would feel sick, dizzy. I would have chills sometimes. The thought of food made me gag in the morning. I had such a problem actually maintaining any semblance of diet, any semblance of healthy anything, that I was really in a bad spot. And before I go any further, this is actually a funny little, no, I think it's funny. I was still working at this point, and I would get up at 7 o'clock, 6:30 a.m. for meetings, and I'd be on these calls. These are one-on-one conversations with employees or partners or whatever. And I remember being in the backyard playing with their dog, taking this call, nothing different, nothing unusual, saying, hold on a second, I gotta put you on mute. Mute, throw up in the backyard, unmute, back to the conversation. No problem. What the fuck's wrong with that? It's messed up. That started becoming my, I wouldn't say daily, every other day. I started doing that for several months. What made me feel better during this point in 2019, the beginning part of the year, was I took that half empty salsa jar and that I stashed in the freezer because you want to keep your liquor chill, right? It's just a salsa jar with gin and tonic. I would just start sneaking it out of the freezer 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:30. And I would pocket it very quietly. I would open up both fridges. I'd open the freezer and the fridge at the same time, so it wasn't obvious I was going for the freezer. Pick that up, gently close the fridge while I got the milk for the coffee. That's how you did it. And that's how I found myself feeling better. Just started drinking at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. Well, now my crashes were starting to happen at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, because I had nothing in me. I'd be throwing up what I had, anything in me, any nutrients, anything. Hitting gym right away, 8 o'clock, soon 7 o'clock, soon even 6:30, just as soon as I woke up, pretty much. And I'd be, of course, passing out by 10. Anyway, so that was my two a day. That was part of the two per day that I was telling doctors that I was going through. Still that half empty salsa jar, never got fully empty, still within the two a day. And I started seeing well the therapist. He didn't seem like a bastard. His name is, I forget what his, I know what his name is, but the joke name that I love to give him, my moniker of choice is Dr. Scarf. is a very dashing scarf on his profile picture. So scarf starts telling me, okay, we're gonna start meeting every 2 weeks from the once a month we were doing. Soon that turns into every week, because I'm not getting better. I'm starting to have panic attacks. I'm waking up terrified in dreams where I'm being crushed or I'm being like pulverized from falling blocks. It just like happened over and over and over. I am just flailing everywhere, every which way in life. And so he starts meeting weekly, and with the help of a actual psychiatrist, I start taking medication, trying out different meds. And this is the end of that year. So it's starting to be the end of 2019. I'm trying out these different antidepressants. I was diagnosed with major depressive disorder, and nothing's sticking. Some are making me throw up worse, although it's hard to tell if that was from the drinking or if that was from the not drinking. Some are just making me feel really crazy. So nothing's too out there, but I'm trying different medications, nothing's sticking. Work is just on the thread. Work is just about to break. And HR reaches out to me and they say, listen, you need to do something. So they put me on short-term disability because I start having suicidal thoughts. Those to and from trips to Cleveland, or there was one trip to Kalamazoo. I start fantasizing about just letting the car go off the side of the road at 80 miles an hour. And that was a recurring thing. That was starting to happen like every time I traveled. So there was like when HR reached out to me, there was a very honest, tearful request for help, or at least an admission of need for help. And they got me on short-term disability. Maybe to the chagrin of my boss, I don't know. I don't hold that against them. And I moved to my self-crafted therapy. And my self-crafted therapy was to give the medications time to settle, to give them a chance to work, not worry about work. So let loose all that anxiety. Just find some way to relax, which I did by reading Tolkien. I read all those again. While drinking at 6:30 in the morning, I'd wake up in my panic sweat, throw up, do that a couple times, sneak out the gin. And there was this little sitting room, right, actually past this wall, with a chair in the corner, very nice little upholstered chair, and a makeshift plant stand out of an upturned pallet. So like those pallet boxes, the things that you stock stuff with in a warehouse, tons of little nooks and crannies. Yeah. So the little salsa jar would go in one of the nooks, maybe the cranny, and I'd sit there and read and let the meds work about 3 or 4 hours every day till I crashed at 10 a.m., 11 a.m., whatever. Ate a bunch of food because my body was freaking starving by about noon. I hadn't had breakfast yet. And crash again after drinking again. This is not helping my home life. This is not making anything better. No, this is getting better. So Joey, she's an artist. She starts, let's just say, for those of you that know artists or are artists, let's just say her desire to find residencies, which is the thing where an artist goes someplace else to get away from their life, to focus on their work. Her desire to start finding residencies is through the roof. She's just doing this all the time. She did two or three of them. I think one of them was actually just made up by a friend to just have her go stay with her for a week. And she's doing what she can to give me time, but also to keep herself safe and sane. So the things are not going well for our relationship. Here I am taking meds, drinking while on meds, having massive fights with Joey over, are you allowed to be drinking at 10 o'clock at night? Because that's the one she got to see. I was only showing her the drinking I was doing at the appropriate hours. I would hide every other type of drinking. If it was 8 o'clock, totally fine. 8 a.m., not fine. So when she saw the 8 p.m. drink come out, are you allowed to be drinking on your meds? Yeah, sure. You talk to them while you're drinking? I don't have a problem with drinking. What the hell? That's the fight. So that was a bunch of fights during that period. And let's see. Yep. So that was probably the route to the depth of my addiction. I wasn't being honest with Joey. I was off work. I was lying to my doctors, lying to myself, vomiting every morning. And I was starting to get into the day too. Drinking constantly, not getting anything done. Prospects were not good. And I'd started to wonder, actually, like, well, I'd not wonder, but I had started to consider when I was growing up, I'd always known that my family had, like I said, had a disposition to drinking, to addiction. And so it turned into I have a disposition for drinking. Okay. I'm a functional alcoholic. That was a quasi-proud badge that I applied to myself for some time this is just how I am. And eventually that turned into, around this point, I don't see myself at 50. This is not, and I'm okay with that. Like, kind of not like a, there was no firmness in my statement. There was no surety. There was just acquiescence that wasn't going to be for me. Life after 50, if I made it that long. So I approached the beginning of 2020 with that being my mindset. So that was me, January. And it came to a head where it didn't actually come to a physical head. It didn't actually come ever to a point. There was no showdown. There was no breaking point. There was no hitting pay dirt. It was just this utter depth of knowing I had lost, or I was losing. Like, I'd already lost before the chips were down. What I do remember, though, is some Monday in February of that month, I was low on my supplies. I was low on gin, low on emergency gin, the shitty stuff. And I was even low on emergency vodka. I'd buy them all because I was trying to be economical. So I'd buy like the shitty stuff as a backup that I would drink when I was already drunk, so I wouldn't notice the difference in taste. You have the good stuff first and the shitty stuff after, so you didn't notice the taste and you save on money. Frugal. Anyway, so I'm low on all of them. I'm out of the good stuff. And I just made my last drink with the last of the emergency gin, with the last of the vodka. And we had just had a big fight, Joey and I, over my drinking or my lack of a problem. And she had just gotten back from one of the residencies. And I think from her perspective, she saw that nothing had changed. Nothing had gotten better. I was getting worse and worse. I was looking worse. I looked like shit. And we just had a fight. She'd gone to bed. I was having my last drink. I finished the drink. And I pour the last little bit of vodka with some random tequila that I found to make it something. And immediately just turned my nose up at it, even drinking now, as it had grown to this point, had gotten and lost all luxury in it. It no longer offered any kind of positivity. It offered no virtue. It offered no taste. It offered nothing. It was a necessity at that point. It was like drinking grape cough syrup to me. I needed it. I hate grape cough syrup, by the way. I remember throwing it up as a kid. So to me, it was drinking medication. There was no enjoyment of being drunk. There was just a necessity of being fuzzy. So I pass out at that point on the couch, and I wake up the next day and immediately go back for the leftover in the jar and put some ice in it. And I immediately, almost, usually when I would throw up, it would be a culmination. It would build up in me and I'd go to it and fine. this time it was literally like a spit take. Took a swig, almost immediately out. The body had rejected it. I physically was unable to digest it. Maybe it was because it was tequila. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. The point is, my body refused to have it. And I knew I was done. There was no breaking point for me. That was the last drink I ever took. That was February 17th, 2020. And so I started my detox solo, because that's the smart way to do it, right? Do that, don't do that. And change the pace here. I had not prepared for this at all. I had told Joey I was done that day, sheepishly. I was not proud of it. If I were proud of it, that would have admitted that I had a problem in the first place. This was me just simply saying, oh, by the way, I stopped drinking. No big deal. But it was a big deal. I started that day, actually, I started shaking. Like by noon, I'd always shook a little bit before I had some sort of food or, you know, sugar. I started thinking it was, you know, over the years, I started thinking it was a blood sugar thing, just drinking. So I started having shakes, really bad shakes. The vomiting continued. It turned into an every hour on the 20-minute mark. The entire day, it would alternate with chills and fevers. By 36 hours, I started having auditory hallucinations. I apologize if this is triggering, I guess, but I just think it was weird to hear ragtime music from down the street. But this culminated, though, in actual use of the word. This broke for me when at 60 hours, maybe 2.5 days into it. Yeah, 60. I'm out in the backyard. I forced myself to go out and do my duty for the house, for the husband, and go play with the dog so and get him fed. So we're out in the back bistro, our dog, and I are playing kick. And then I wake up in the kitchen. What the hell happened? Why is my neighbor here? Why is Brian here in the kitchen with us? Why am I sweating? Why had I had a seizure in the backyard? Joey had found me, called Brian over because he was a neighbor. They got me into the house. And that's when I started the process of being willing, best way I can put it. I offered no defiance. I offered no thinking I thought better, thinking I knew better. Joey said, let's go to the hospital. I said, okay. Joey said, do this, do that. We have to get you there now. You're going to tell him everything. Okay, I will. And I told him everything. Told him the accurate numbers. There was no more 2 drinks per day. It was more close to 2.5 handles a week or whatever the number came out to be. And I started my detox in a room at the hospital for 2.5 days. I was pretty lucky. I never got a firm estimate from a doctor on how close I'd come. The hospital bill alone, a test that was pretty close. If you at least use the dollar value as a scale, that doesn't mean much in the US though. And they got me fixed up. And it, you know, again, when I got out of detox of the hospital, Joey and I got back. She said, I want you to look at these IOP, these intensive outpatient programs, these rehab facilities. I said, okay, no problem. I'll go. No defensiveness. Because I think I had been broken by that depth of desperation. I was willing to try something, anything to make things better. So I entered this intensive outpatient program. And it was okay. Here's where my defiant behavior started to pop back up. So for those who might not know, like IOP is pretty much AA that you pay for. You sit in a circle with people. In my class, it was about 2/3 court ordered. maybe three quarters didn't want to be there. Half had very obvious other addictions. I'm sure most, if not all, had actual addictions, side addictions. There's lots of ways that I could find to make myself feel different or special. I found differences in my peers, not similarities. I don't smoke weed. You know, I don't party. I don't have a DUI. I'm not here because I have a court order. These are all differences that matter nothing at all. They didn't matter at all. But I still found them. And it gave me some trouble for the first half of IOP. But what got me through that was when they, when we got to the actual beginning, these IOPs, they do, or at least mine, they do like a 12-week rotation. So if you're there for all 3 months or whatever, you might see it rotate and turn back over to week one. So your week one might be there week four to somebody else's week eight. Anyway, so when we finally got the first step stuff, so like admitting powerlessness and asking for help, and that's when I really butted up against that, because I've been trained all my life. I don't need help. I'm smart. I don't need help. I don't need to study. I don't need to ask for help. Except I'd always had, I'd always needed it. I just powered through it or got lucky or just was, you know, fortunate. So when the topic came up of admitting powerlessness, and in the same token, we started talking about, do you still have alcohol at the house? Well, Joey still drinks. We don't have gin. We don't have vodka. We don't have my alcohol. So I'm safe, right? We still have a couple beers. Still have wine. I don't drink wine. And everyone in the room said, what are you doing? Even the people who were smoking weed are like, what the hell are you doing? And they said, okay, you need to get rid of that stuff. I said, sure, no problem. I'll do that tonight. I will do it because I'm here and I'm engaged. I am here for my recovery. And I said, no, you can't do that. You need to have somebody else do it. I dug my heels in at that. It was a sticking point. It was a problem for me. I needed to be able to prove to myself that I could do it, that I was powerful enough to control my own addiction. And that is when I realized, or half helped from the group, like IOP helped me realize that was my addiction hiding in my own pride. It had put on the facade of, I can do this. I need to be able to prove to myself that I am capable. Fuck pride. When I accepted this fact of myself, that it was my addiction living through my thought that I could be in control, or thought that I should be able to be in control, I asked Joey right then and there. I'm in the IOP circle. I call her up. Can you just handle this for me right now? I don't want to be there. She said, no problem. I'll do that right now. Cleared it all out. And I think that was when I actually first started my steps. That was my admission of powerlessness, my inability to control it, needing help. So IOP went pretty simply after that. I finished up IOP and I found meetings. Now being a, I think the term I used earlier was a COVID kid or a Zoom baby. I didn't do any in-persons, but I tried a couple Zoom meetings, stumbled across a couple, none really resonated with me until I found my home group. Oh my God, and it wasn't anything, I didn't click. I didn't feel like there weren't angels. I mean, there were actually sound effects of angels, but I think that was more Mikey's doing than the actual, you know, occurrence for me. But what got me was my ability to fade into the back, because it's just the size of the meeting. And there's several meetings like this, but it's a big meeting. And I could be off camera if I wanted to. I could be listening while doing other stuff and feeling productive. I didn't have to be just in front of the camera. That was necessary for me at the time to ease into my recovery with a meeting. So I could start absorbing this information. Of course, there's a slogan though, I think that's out there that floats around that I think I heard. that your car doesn't get fixed just because it sits in the mechanic's parking lot, something like that. So I started turning my camera on. I started talking here and there. Home group members and service members started asking me to do the preamble, do the responsibility statement. I started getting my name out there. And once again, Dr. Scarf, therapist, who's in recovery too, and he'd been brought up to speed, and I finally told him, I told him at this point, yeah, by the way, I'm actually an alcoholic. You're like, oh yeah, big surprise. He says, okay, I want you to get a sponsor. Just get a sponsor. So that day, that same day, pride kicked in, but at least in my favor this time. And at the meeting, I reached out and chat because I'm doing it all with my freaking phone, trying to maintain an arm's length distance from the meeting. And I reach out and say, hey, I'm looking for a sponsor during the after meeting. Jeremy R., some of you may know him, texted back right away. Sure, no problem. Talked to him and we clicked. It was great. Had that same kind of quiet, dry humor. I felt comfortable. I felt at home. Maybe I would feel at home with anybody. But he felt at home with him. Yeah, and that was the beginning of my own step work. That's just how I found a sponsor. And over the next 10 months, you know, I spent my time doing the steps. I realize I'm running a bit low on time, but I want to just say that it's been lucky for me to have found so much support from an online community. And I've always been an IT related guy. I'm comfortable with virtual meetings. I'm comfortable on the phone. Maybe not comfortable doing video chats, but whatever. But I was able to do my step work that way and also be of service that way. So I don't know how many of us here are new to recovery, but if I could pound down some keywords here, for me it was service, open-mindedness, being willing to change, and honesty. Those are the three things that I think saved my life. And that they're opposing them were my pride, my isolative behavior, and my resentments against myself. Yeah, I don't have a good ending to this. I don't have everything fixed. I'm still working on shit. I'm sure many can attest to that. I'm working again. I did quit that job, just wasn't a good fit. I'd been one of those things where I'd gotten promoted into ineptitude or whatever the term is. I just let that one go. I didn't do it out of pride. I didn't kill myself doing the job out of pride. Found something far better, far more enjoyable, doing service work, being busy, being social. And it's just been such a pleasure to be here with all of you. So thank you.